As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Staskel. He is Paul Tenorio. And Paul, this week we are brought to you by water. That's right, water. High quality H2O. You should drink it whenever you want to, especially if you're running around in the hot sun. Stay hydrated. It's important.
It's weird that you said that, Sam, because we honestly did not talk about what the ad was going to be, the sponsor this week. And I have been like definitely excessively dehydrated this week, and so you really I feel like that was like, did you talk to my wife or something before this show?
No, you're on the Heinz plan, clearly.
I'm on so the Heinz plan.
There you go. Paul, get some water in your life. You gotta hydrate to dominate, as the saying goes. Is that a saying? I don't know.
It is now. Allocation disorder. My brother, you gotta hydrate to dominate.
There it is. We have a lot to talk about. Atlanta United is the content gift that keeps on giving. They fired Gabriel Heinze over the weekend after, 13 games? Things had not gone well for Atlanta on the field. I believe they had an 8-match winless streak going when Heinze was fired, punctuated by a 1-0 home loss to the New England Revolution. Of course, there was a lot more going on behind the scenes. Our colleague Felipe Cardenas reported on a lot of that stuff, some of it involving Joseph Martinez and him being forced to train off to the side and not being included in the squad. And you have Atlanta fans chanting, Joseph, 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 at the game over the weekend at Heinze's last match. You have a lot of reports, including some from Felipe, about overtraining and CBA grievances related to said overtraining. And as I hinted right off of the top, a fun story about preseason and a training session or sessions in which Heinze prevented players from drinking as much water as they wanted to sort of simulate match conditions. That stopped eventually, according to all of the reports out there. But this was a guy who, Paul, I think both of us thought would do well. I think we both thought it was a good hire. At least I did. I shouldn't speak for you.
Yeah.
It's crashed and burned after 13 games, a third of a season, essentially.
I thought that he had the potential to turn around Atlanta. But I remember talking to Felipe when he wrote the story at the beginning of the year about Atlanta. And we had, he had been working on that story for a long time. We had been talking about that story for a long time. And I remember having a conversation about everything that was known about Heinze, and everything that people Felipe was talking about at the time was like, this could absolutely blow up, or it could be like a huge success. And I just remember saying, like, you know, this is all going to come down to like how Gabriel Heinze essentially can function with the Atlanta front office. Like, how can they coexist? And, you know, ultimately, I think that this wasn't even about the coexisting with the front office.
It was cohesion with the players.
It was cohesion with everything else. It was like, it was like the worst. The problem was they brought like the most volatile personality they could into a club that was already on shaky standing as far as what its identity was, and that was lethal.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the volatility. I mean, you can get away with those sorts of things. I was talking to somebody earlier this week about this whole situation. People don't really remember. Tata Martino, there were some of the same complaints about him.
Not the first grievance that's been filed against Atlanta.
Yeah, they had similar overtraining issues in 2017 in the first season under Tata. And even after he left, you know, I remember hearing things kind of just on background that, hey, maybe not all Atlanta players are so sad to see him go. Right? Because, like, they had success, but, like, it was a lot and it was intense and not everybody was on board with it. Right? So it can work, right? If the guys buy in and if they succeed on the field. But when you're running a locker room the way he ran it, you have to win. You have to, especially at a club like Atlanta where the expectations are sky high. But if you don't win, and you're doing things like training every single day and or withholding water or benching the star player who's the most highly paid guy on the team in Joseph Martinez, and you're not getting results, that's going to look really bad really, really fast. And I think that's kind of what happened here with Heinze. Like, Tata could get away with it because guess what? Players can't complain when you're racking up 3 points every week. It's like, hey, I might not love this every single day, but you can't argue with it. With Heinze, you could argue with it.
I don't know. I've tried not to become too much of a conspiracy theorist. I have friends who are definitely...
Where are we going? What kind of conspiracies? It's dangerous in these times.
It just felt like toward the end there, Heinze was looking to get out. Like, okay,
yeah, I mean,
if I want an exit strategy, what do I do? Let me bench the most prolific scorer in the club's history and have him train away from the team, and then spend my entire press conference after my 8th consecutive game without a win talking about this is a good team. Maybe it's just the coach's fault. Maybe the coach is an idiot. Essentially, by doing so, challenging both the intelligence of the media, the sincerity of the concerns that existed around the club, and daring your bosses to fire you despite those results. Like, in spite of those results, having the confidence to be like, oh, it's not really me by saying it's me. Like, it was just like, to me, I was like, okay, he's got a ticket booked. He must have a sick buyout clause on a 2-year guaranteed contract.
Was it only a 2-year guarantee? I mean, you mentioned a buyout clause. That wouldn't shock me, man. Like, you know, he was sort of like laughing on the sidelines. I saw a shot of him laughing on the sidelines during the last game against the Revs. And like, it didn't seem like he was like someone that was going to be crushed if it came to an end. I'll put it like that. Right. I do wonder, and I don't know, I'm not a lawyer. I obviously have not seen his contract or anything like that. But I do wonder with the CBA grievances, if there's any room for Atlanta to try and argue that they fired him for cause and to not pay him out at all. And even if there is, I wonder if Atlanta would even attempt to go down that road because it'd be messy.
Yeah, it's like the question like the NWSL had to ask itself. Like, should we open the door to like a messy legal battle over something that's like relatively meaningless and like doesn't really impact our business that much? And like NWSL was like, yes, we should. And we should continue to do it.
Let's dive right in. We'll never look back.
That? Will Atlanta do that too? Maybe. Sam, I was thinking this week as this was unfolding, and I saw that press conference that I just referenced after the last game before he got fired. I almost texted you this. I don't know why I didn't text it to you.
I was at a wedding over the weekend, so maybe that's why. You were respecting my boundaries.
Yeah, trying to. Why? Like, who would you rate? I was like, there is nobody I would rate higher right now than besides Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Has there ever been somebody more likely to do an interview in his native country and absolutely crap all over MLS? Like, all over MLS and everything it exists about. I will put $20 down right now to say that, like, within the next year, there will be multiple, not just one, multiple instances of Heinze just absolutely crapping on, like, the lack of pressure that the players feel in MLS, yeah. the lack, all the, those things that we hear. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, lock it in. Never bet MLS lock of the year.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet against that. I mean, if you're going to rank some guys, Zlatan obviously did it while he was here, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Another guy who did it while he was here, by the way, Domé Torrent.
Yeah, Domé did not.
Domé quit, basically, in protest.
maybe one of the best candidates for the open Atlanta United job is like Domé. I mean, honestly,
like, yeah.
Yeah, right? Probably number one on the list. If you want somebody to help you short term that knows the league, can come in and without too much transition time, you know, and was successful in the league, you know what you're going to get. Like, yeah, he's number one on the list.
I mean, he's not the easiest guy to deal with either, from all accounts. And so who knows? Maybe they ride Rob Valentino, or as I like to call him, Bobby Valentino.
Great guy. Great guy, Rob Valentino. Really, really singer. One of the nicest guys as well. Probably in the league. I'm rooting for him. He's got a really, like, kind of sad backstory professionally for soccer. He was drafted by New England. He actually played for two different MLS teams, never actually made an MLS regular season appearance. And he got to midfield to get in as a substitute and make his professional debut, and the ball never went out of bounds and the game ended before he could get in and help New England close off a game. And I wrote about him. He was playing for Orlando City's USL club. He was their captain. He was like the trusted leader, veteran in the locker room. And I was like convinced that they were going to bring him to MLS just because he had been in the league before. He was like the most respected guy in the locker room. And I wrote about how, like, you know, that was going to be his moment to finally get that chance that he had been working so hard for.
You jinxed him, Paul.
And they didn't bring him up, and he never played in MLS. And yet, you know, now he's coached in MLS.
Now he's coaching.
I'm rooting for the guy. You know, he's just such a good dude, and like, he's grinding it out, you know?
Well, they drew at Cincinnati in his first game in charge. I don't think they see him as the long-term solution there, but who knows, man? Maybe they go on a hot streak and Rob Valentino keeps it. I think that would be a pretty big shock to everybody.
I don't think that's going to happen, yeah.
If you're Atlanta, where do you go from here? Because from what I've been told, they're pretty capped out in terms of money. The roster, I mean, maybe it's good, but it hasn't really looked like it.
I don't think it's that good.
Like, they have some talented players, but I don't really know what you do if you're Atlanta. Like, what do you do next? Carlos Bocanegra is out of contract within the year. Darren Eales and him have a lot of pressure on them now. This is two coaching hires in a row that they have got wrong, and they've publicly said they got wrong by firing both of those head coaches. One 13 games into a season and one shortly after his first season was completed in Frank DeBoer. So what do you do if they're them? Do you think they're around long term? What do you think the profile is for this hire? Where do you go from here if you're Atlanta United?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I think you have to believe at this point that Carlos Bocanegra is going to be back. Otherwise, why is he hiring the coach with Darren Eales, right? Like, I mean, why?
Things change, man. You know, Mike Burns was hiring a coach, and then 3 days later he was fired when Bruce Arena came on board.
So. Well, I do think, you know, what's interesting, Sam, you and I talk about this all the time. I mean, look at the top five coaches in the Supporters Shield standings right now, right? It's Bruce Arena, Brian Schmetzer, Jim Curtin.
Did you see this tweet? Let me pull it up real quick so I can give credit. So you keep going, but
who else am I missing? You're going to need to help me here.
I think it was
Bruce,
yeah,
Brian, Jim.
just five American dudes named Bruce, Brian, Peter, Jim, and who's the fifth one? Why are we missing the fifth one? And Greg Vanney.
There we go.
Apologies. That's from MLS Buzz account. Some American MFs named Bruce, Brian, Peter, Greg, and Jim.
Yeah.
And reacting to Neville and Heinze.
And so I think we talk about it all the time, but we should talk about it seriously here about Atlanta. Atlanta's hires, let's be honest, they've all been about matching the stature of Tata Martino since he left. Understandably mm-hmm. so. He was the most accomplished coach to come to Major League Soccer, probably in its history, as far as where he had coached before coming to Major League Soccer. And he won a cup. And so in order to continue the brand in a way, mm-hmm. they tried to match that stature with De Boer first, Heinze second. Both former players, very well known.
Huge names.
Didn't work. Maybe it's time to cast your eyes to the domestic pool and say, okay, let's go get the best coach that we can get in the United States. And, you know, or even for the rest of this year, let's go get a guy like Dom Kinnear who knows how to win an MLS, who can get us through this year and buy us time to put together a proper search or to allow Dom to audition to have that job. I think that it's, you know, I think it's a smart strategy. I think it's something that they should do.
I wouldn't hate it, but I don't think you necessarily need to be like, okay, like let's go hire somebody from domestic, even though like this is like the hill that we die on every single show, it feels like. I'm sure the listeners are probably getting bored of that conversation, so I'll move past quickly. I think you need to take your time and hire the right guy. It doesn't need to be a big name. It doesn't not need to be a big name, right? It's just like, who do you want to be, Atlanta United? How do you want to play? And the coach sets the culture, man. Like more than anybody else in the club, the coach sets the culture. And so what do you want that to be, right? And figure it out and give that person time to actually implement it. Because that's the other part of this. Is Atlanta United, the expectations are so high. And if you're not in first or near the top of the table and playing, not just first or near the top of the table, because DeBoer was by the end of his first year in charge. Right, they made a conference final. They hosted it. They had a good regular season.
Yeah, because he relented.
They won the open.
He relented.
They won the open cup because he relented. Right, but like they still got decent results. They didn't play fun soccer anymore. Right, and like that was what the criticism was. But you got to pick a lane. You got to give the person time. You can't be reactionary with your signings, which I think they have been, particularly last year when you look at guys like Marcelino Moreno, Jurgen Damm, that sort of thing. You just got to take a breath and be a little bit more calm.
I'm glad you brought that up, Sam. Let's talk about that roster for a while. Let's talk about the other factor here. They've gotten coaching hires wrong. They got a lot wrong in this roster. They pulled the trigger too soon on trying to retool it and rebuild it. And I think that they made some bad decisions in kind of how they picked their battles, where they let guys
go.
Yeah,
I mean, we've been
guys.
Over this a bunch.
I just
right?
want to point and that then, out. Like when you said Jurgen Damm's name, I was just like, oh my God, let's just talk about that factor. It's like that this roster is not that good.
I think that's directly tied to the expectation part, right? It's kind of panic mode when things don't go well. And when you're in panic mode, it's like, okay, what can we get right now? Right? And if that kind of leaves you a little bit compromised. And I think that's what we've seen with Atlanta. I think they just need some stability there. They need to just take a breath and make sure, okay, this year we might not be the greatest team in the world, but we cannot sacrifice 2022 for the sake of trying to get everything right in 2021. You can still turn it around, right? There's 20 games left for them this season, which is crazy. It feels like we should be like 2/3 of the way through the season. We're only a third of the way through the season, but that's a different discussion entirely. They have time to turn it around. You know, Eastern Conference, not the toughest always, and you know, seven teams make the playoffs, right? So they can sneak in, no doubt. But yeah, I think they need to take their time. I wouldn't hate giving Valentino a little bit of a longer look or bringing in somebody kind of on a shorter term contract, just to sort of bridge the gap and see what you have and do a full reset and kind of figure out what you want to be. So I think that's what I would do if I was Atlanta. There might be some short-term pain there, but you know, there's been a lot of short-term pain recently. It's turned into long-term pain. And if you want to break that cycle, I think you just need to, I think you need to really think this thing through and not rush into it.
Yeah, it could go bad. It could go worse quickly. I mean, they're 6 points off the playoff line right now. And that's, and NYCFC has a game in hand. So let's call it 7 points off the playoff
line. So they win two games. They're right.
But I'm saying my point is if they lose their next two games,
Columbus at home at Orlando.
Right.
So
then they are in real trouble and you can just pretty much just start to kiss this season goodbye. So I don't have Atlanta making the playoffs. I do not have Atlanta.
I mean, that's fair, but like literally if they win three games in a row at any point in the remaining 20 games, they're going to be right in the conversation.
So. MLS, baby. No one season is ever dead. Ever.
No one's dead. Speaking of teams that are close to dead, though, we're going to get to them a little bit after the break. We'll talk some Miami. We'll talk a little bit of Chris Mueller, Kyle Duncan, U.S. national team. We're going to take a quick break and be back with all of that stuff.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we are back on Allocation Disorder. Sam Stasekull, Paul Tenorio, your friends, your soccer buddies, just talking about soccer. American soccer. I don't know where I'm going with this intro. Got pretty weird pretty fast. Regardless, let's talk a little bit about Chris Mueller and Kyle Duncan. You're wondering, Sam, why? Well, let me tell you why.
Wow.
What?
Coming strong. You got a problem with my intro abilities today, Sam?
Listen, man, we're in the dog days of summer. It is what it is. But listener, you're wondering why. Chris Mueller and Kyle Duncan? You just got to lean into it, Paul. Well, Chris Mueller, it was announced earlier this week, is leaving Orlando City after this season. He has signed a pre-contract with Scottish club Hibernian. Paul, we reported today that Kyle Duncan, New York Red Bulls right back, whose contract is also expiring, much like Mueller's, at the end of the season. He has the ability to sign a pre-contract. He's been getting some interest from a couple of teams in France, where he began his career, as well as in Germany. So we'll see. We could see a similar situation happening with there as with Mueller. This is interesting to me for a couple of reasons. These are fringe national team guys, like very fringe, I think you would say. They were both on the 60-man preliminary roster for the Gold Cup. Neither of them made it. On the final squad, Duncan's been having a pretty good season with the Red Bulls. Mueller started really slowly for Orlando, but is sort of rounding into form now. In his case, he's not moving to a league that's particularly better than MLS. He's not moving to a club that's particularly better than his own. I can't imagine he's getting a big, big, big raise from what he was making or what he could have made had he stayed with Orlando. And so it's just, it's interesting for all of those reasons. And it's interesting because they actually, they chose to, well, in the case of Mueller, he chose to wind down his contract and bounce, right? And he didn't take the lucrative offer or the more lucrative offer to extend and to stay. And he didn't put himself at the mercy of his club if he wanted to go to Europe. And I'm not sure it's a great move. It's certainly not a move that's blowing anyone away in terms of wow factor or anything like that. But it is interesting, and I think it could be kind of a start of a trend. Maybe we'll see it with Duncan. I think we will see this with more players in the future going forward, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's very little leverage that players have with Major League Soccer contracts. MLS signs guys to really long-term deals with multiple years of team options. The typical deal coming out of a draft like Chris Mueller is a 4 or 5 year deal, right? A 2+1+1 or a 2+1+1+1. And, you know, you really don't have a choice for a lot of these guys. There's not really great options, outside of that. And so, you know, I think that Chris Mueller looked at the situation and said, if I'm going to leave to go to Europe, the end of my contract, it has to be then. It has to be then, or it's not going to happen.
He's turning 25 very soon.
And
so
he looked at what happened with Aaron Long and he said, okay, yeah, I can take the big money, but if I do get into the national team and I do start scoring, like, and he was, right? He was starting to get into the national team January camps. Mm-hmm. He was playing well. He was thinking to himself, I'll be at the mercy of Orlando City to sell me, which, by the way, not a great track record, Orlando City, of selling players. They don't have any track record of selling players and handled the Kyle Larin sale poorly. And
well, they would probably argue that Kyle Larin handled that poorly.
Yeah, but I mean, you can go back and read the story I wrote about it then. It was induced by their own behavior or their lack thereof. Kyle Larin was playing on his rookie contract while being the leading scorer on that team for multiple years with offers that were not real offers. To extend his contract. So totally different regime now, by the way, than handled. I'm not trying to put that on the current Orlando City situation.
No, but, put it on a ball.
Well, I mean, it's the same owner.
Be completely unreasonable.
Same owner,
okay?
And same, you know, different sporting director. Let's make that clear.
And coach. There you go.
But I think that this is a player grasping at the little control that he has in MLS over his future. And that's, I think, why you'll start to see more of this happen. And I think, Sam, there's a lot of pressure right now for players who are in the picture at all for the U.S. national team to try to go to Europe and produce if they really 100%. Want a shot at breaking into the national team.
A ton of pressure, like all-consuming levels of pressure, right? Paul, you and I both hear stories from various people that we speak to. Anytime there's a national team camp, right? These guys are sitting around, they're hanging out. There's not much to do in these different cities that they're going to. And they're at the lunch table or the dinner table or the breakfast table or training or whatever. And they're all talking about who's going where in Europe, how much money people are making. And it becomes a thing where it's like almost sort of keeping up with the Joneses. These are your peers. You want to compete with them. Not just for a national team spot, but like on a personal level, right? You feel like you're not doing enough if you're not doing as much as the next guy. And so with more and more guys now in Europe, I think you're going to start to see more and more of a demand. Some clubs, you can feel good about signing a longer-term deal and then being sold. Dallas, I think, is the prime example of that. They can't win a game, but they're selling guys left and right. And there are some other teams that I think players trust, right? Matt Turner is an example of a guy who just signed an extension, right? And told me when I interviewed him not long ago that he thinks the Revs will sell him if they get a fair offer, right? Which we'll see, right? Maybe if they do get a fair offer, we'll see. But point being, like, I think we'll see more and more of this, particularly with guys that aren't homegrowns, right? Because the homegrown guys, it's a little bit of a different ball game. They're starting younger. There are mechanisms for them to kind of be paid a little bit more than the college players right off the bat. So maybe they're more willing to sign a longer deal. But you even saw it with Jonathan Gomez in Louisville, right? Turning down a homegrown deal with Dallas to go sign with a USL team, in part because he wanted to have the ability to be free at 18.
And right? This goes back to what we talked about in the last episode. These young players are starting to recognize that they have interest in the global market. And yeah. Some of the leverage that existed for Major League Soccer in the past, I think, is not going to exist as much in the future. And I think we're going to see some battles playing out, not necessarily at the player level early on, but I think when you get to a certain point, when you start looking at how MLS is trying to cast this net to capture as many of these young players as they can into their homegrown system to be able to sell those players, you're going to get some catchment. Pushback, right? You're going to get pushback from those independent clubs in MLS Next when MLS teams are coming and saying, all right, you've got a great kid. We want you to give him to us, right? Well, they're going to want payment, right? They're going to want compensation, solidarity payments, and all of that stuff, right? And they're going to say, well, why don't we just sell him? And then I think the next level of that is talking about the Reserve League versus USL. You know, if you're an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, are you going to go and sign a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal with an MLS team and have that pathway and that money, right? Potentially sign a 6-figure homegrown deal? Or are you going to look at Louisville or Indy and sign a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal? Where at the bare minimum, you know, okay, I'm giving myself an out because this contract is shorter. And it reminds me of a conversation I had with Tyler Adams a couple years ago. We were on a national team trip. I don't remember where we were, Belgium, I think, or something. And
there's only a few to choose from when it comes to Adams. Yeah, he hasn't been on that many.
It was pre-Greg Berhalter. It was when Dave Sarakin was the interim coach. That narrows it down a bit more. But like, it was right before it was officially announced that he was going to Leipzig. Because remember, they held on to that announcement for the whole season, even though the deal was done.
Yeah.
And he actually talked about it going to – it was like – he talked about it like it was a done deal. And he talked about the fact that, like, he knew if he signed that deal at the age that he signed, I don't remember if he signed at 15 or 16.
Yeah.
But that his deal would be coming up in a year where he was still young enough to go to Europe and he wouldn't have to worry about it. And mm-hmm. that was part of the reason that convinced him to go. But not every homegrown signing is going to sign at 15 years old or 16 years old.
Yeah.
And so that's where, again, I just think, Sam, like you said, like, we're going to see more of this. I just think we're going to see more players understand that there are European teams watching them and looking for these leverage points and saying, no, I'm not going to sign that second deal if mm-hmm. I think I have a shot at Europe, or no, I'm not going to sign that homegrown contract, or I'm not going to go into an MLS academy if it means that I don't have to lock into one of these 4 or 5 year deals.
Do you think MLS and teams will ever change the deals? Because you mentioned it just then. They're long contracts. It's team control for 4 or 5 years. Do you think if faced with, you know, a Gomez situation again, right? And the league in Dallas didn't budge on that one, right? Do you think if faced with a similar situation in the future, they'll change and they'll say, okay, you want a 2-year deal? We'll give you a 2-year deal.
No, I don't, because MLS never has. But I think it would require more.
I mean, if
than
the alternative
just,
is them just going elsewhere for free.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have to. I think it would have to be more than just like 1 or 2 more instances. I think it would have to become a trend.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would have to be, unless it's like, I mean, I guess I should say, like, you look at like Weston McKennie, like that was like a complete alteration of how MLS thought about solidarity payments, how they thought about homegrown players.
I was going to say selling. The reason Chris Richards was able to be a homegrown player like ahead of time, because he wasn't in the academy for a year when he signed that contract, because Weston McKennie left for free, at least from what it appears. I don't know that. No one's ever told me that, but from how it looks, that seems why.
I mean, MLS decided to change its policy on solidarity payments because it lost Weston McKennie for free. And they were anticipating the next few transfers that they can now collect money on, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was a direct result of one player and losing. And they tried really, really, really hard to get Weston. And it was like a real, it was messy behind the scenes.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
It was really messy. And I just think that, you know, maybe if there's like a Weston McKennie level player, if Gomez goes to the first team at Sociedad and becomes a superstar, maybe they're like, man, we can't let that happen again. We have to start having some attractive, more attractive contracts for these players that aren't filled with more years of team options than they are of guaranteed seasons. But they've started to try to make it more attractive with things like extra money that you have for homegrowns for these deals in the supplemental contracts. They've added TAM that you can do towards homegrown deals.
The under 22 initiative.
We've seen it with a
few guys already.
It's a direct response, right? It's a chance to give guys their second deals. Efra Alvarez, you know, Jesus Araujo. Ferreira, Araujo. Like, those are all done to incentivize these teams to lock these guys up, right? But, you know, is there going to be an adjustment the other way? Is there going to be more flexibility? Maybe. Maybe if more Gomez's happen. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that.
You've ended that answer in a different way than you began it. You contradicted yourself, Paul.
I wouldn't be surprised to see MLS change its rules, sorry, but to see more players make the decision not to go the homegrown route.
Ah, okay. Sorry. I'm the idiot, not Paul. I should have known that. I would have had I not been an idiot. Then we wouldn't have had any.
No, I definitely phrased it poorly, but that's what I meant.
I'm glad you clarified. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think eventually we'll get to the point where, to answer my own question, I think eventually we'll get to the point where teams will be able to structure contracts however they want. And I understand why teams want to have these longer deals. Like, it protects them. They developed a player, right? They spent money on him in the academy. They brought him along. They gave him a chance as a pro. You want to be able to, you know, kind of reap the rewards, and a longer contract helps you do that. So I'm not faulting the teams at all for any of that. I'm not faulting the players at all for wanting increased flexibility either, right?
Those deals also give security for players. I mean, there are not 100%. A lot of youth players in the rest of the world making $80,000 for 5 years guaranteed or three years guaranteed.
More. And then for an under-22 deal, a lot more, right? A lot more. It's not like it's a bad deal. It's just a trade-off. Right? And what do you prioritize if you're the player? What do you prioritize if you're the club? I do think we'll start to see kind of a meet in the middle, and I don't think that'll take too long, and I think what that is a three-year deal. Right? And typically now they're at least four, but I think we'll start to see some three-year ones. You think that's crazy?
No, I want to say quickly, because I came across it sounding like I'm like anti-MLS homegrown deals or whatever. Like, the number one thing I hear from people that work outside of MLS or like work in the soccer business but don't work for an MLS team or the league is like, are you kidding me with how much some of these kids are getting paid in MLS that haven't done anything or shown anything?
Yeah.
Like, compared to what kids are making in a Manchester United academy in some cases. I mean, there's a difference between the guys who sign professional deals in those academies, like these players are professionals, and those who sign
they
kind
start
of the
to make more
apprentice deals.
Yeah.
But like, you know, guys who are going to like Schalke on U19 contracts are making nowhere close to what homegrown deals are, you know, nowhere close. So, you know, I will say that. And in fact, I think that this reserve league is potentially an opportunity for MLS to course correct just a touch and to get some of these fringe homegrown players into professional contracts that are not MLS professional contracts, which is what the design of USL was as well, to sign guys to deals that are paying them non-guaranteed, you know, $30,000, $40,000 a year contracts that are more in line with the rest of the world.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that'll be a little bit more. I mean, it's the whole thing's the maturation of the system, right? And it's kind of cool to see it happen kind of in real time. I feel like it's been happening. We're picking these things where we're starting to see it like a little bit more clearer than we usually do over the last 2-3 weeks, which is kind of exciting for people like you and I. But I do think, to get back to the original point, I do think we're going to start to see more guys do what Mueller is doing and wind down those contracts and not be so eager to take that second deal. And maybe that's going to cost them financially, right? Maybe they're leaving money on the table in MLS, but they want to bet on themselves. And betting on themselves means going to Europe and getting into the national team and staying there. So I think we're going to start to see more guys do that, particularly, maybe exclusively, American guys. I think this will be less of a thing with other nationalities. But the American guys, I think, increasingly are going to try and do this. And we talk about proof of concept all the time, Paul, in terms of what MLS players do in Europe, right? And how that affects the perception of European clubs when in the transfer market for MLS players. I think there needs to be a similar proof of concept for young players and MLS clubs of, are you actually going to sell me when I want to be sold or when there's an attractive deal on the table, right? And Dallas has that right now. And maybe, I mean, no one else really has it outside of one or two, right? Beyond Dallas. So maybe Philly, I guess.
I mean, but, maybe a little bit. I mean, it's kind of like FC Dallas used to be, right? Philly. I mean, you make a couple sales, but like, are you going to do it all the time? I think we're starting to see a shift, though. I hope.
Yeah. You know, like I said,
look how
maturation of the process.
Look how it's working out for Dallas. And that's the best thing that can happen to MLS is that every other owner looks at all these sales happening in Dallas and says, you know, we want that. We want that money. Dallas
is also last in the league. So. Or less than the West.
That is preventable, man. I'm telling you, that is preventable. It's like you need to do the other part of it. You sell players and then you buy players that are good.
Yes, they've struggled with that part. They have struggled with that part for sure. All right, man. Well, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to just kind of do some broad impression talk. MLS, Gold Cup, USMNT. We'll break it all down. Stay with us.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we are back. Allocation disorder. Final segment of this week's show. We're just going to do a little whip around. And where better to start a whip around than in Miami? The city where the heat is on, Paul. My God. 5-0. Old-fashioned Bruce Arena ass-whooping. The Revs went down to South Florida to Drive Pink Stadium, and they drove all over Miami, and then they parked, and then they put it in reverse, and then they drove over them again, and then they did it again, and one more time. And Phil Neville is talking about there's no I in team, and where do you even begin? They have 8 points in 12 matches. They have not won a single home game. They've played 6. That's hard to do in MLS. Dallas, who I was just crapping on last segment for being last in the Western Conference, they've played 7 home games. They haven't even lost at home. They haven't won that many. They're 2-0-5, but they haven't lost. Miami is 0-5-1 in 6 home games. They're just giving up goals left and right. They can't score. They have all of these expensive players, and they are just, they're booty. They're trash. They're awful. And I have no idea how they fix it at all.
I think my favorite thing, though, is that Phil Neville is like the reverse Ted Lasso. Like,
yes!
He is, right? Like, He's 100%. Like, he's dropping There's No I in Team, which is like a bad Ted Lassoism, right? It's like a cliche good.
It's not even funny enough or good enough to make
He's like an unlikable guy that's going from England to the U.S. instead of like a likable guy going from the U.S. to England. And yeah. I mean, I guess the one thing that's the same is that like Ted Lasso, well, I don't want any spoilers, so I'll stop there. But like Phil Neville's the reverse Ted Lasso.
He's the reverse Lasso.
It's bad.
You never want a reverse Lasso.
You don't want a reverse Lasso. It's really bad. My favorite thing also was Higuain's reaction to the second goal where so good.
Oh my God. He about had a seizure on the field. Yikes, dude. I mean, Messi was maybe there. And also Paul Pogba, I think, was there. And Kimpembe as well, I saw. I don't know if that's true. I saw it on Twitter. Everything on Twitter is correct, so it must be true. But it's just like, this team had all of the attention, all of the money, all of the star power. And like, I went and I looked it up today. They've played 35 games in MLS. They have 32 points. They have a negative 23 goal differential.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. There's only one way to fix this. It's a complete teardown. It's going to cost the owners even more money because they're going to have to sell Pizarro at a loss. They're going to have to sell some other players at a loss or trade them at a loss.
I mean, but you kind of got to buy out one of Matuidi or Higuain.
You got it. Well, it depends on what you want. Like, if you want this to be a two-year rebuild, you sell Pizarro, and yes, it's at a loss, but it opens a DP spot for you to sell a young DP. Ideally, you buy out one of the two really bad DPs, but even if you don't do that, at the bare minimum, you have to open one DP spot so that you can sign a young DP, which also allows you to sign two more young money players. So it gives you a chance to sign three off-budget players. You have to restock your allocation money, which means you have to trade LGP, you have to trade or sell Fagal, you have to trade or sell Lewis Morgan, you have to trade or sell Christian McCoon. I don't care who you're trading and selling and for how much. You got to get as much as you can, and
they're in like full accumulate asset stage.
Yeah, like I mean, it's full on right now.
It's like the trust the process Sixers, man.
But they like, have to be willing to take a loss. You're not going to make your money back on Pizarro, so you have to just take the loss and take what you can and get what you can for him, right?
I think they will on that one. By the way,
I don't know. We'll see. I mean. It just depends. I mean, they've got to hope that Pizarro now goes to the Gold Cup and crushes it in the knockouts and helps that price in Mexico. But they spent a lot of money on Pizarro. It's not going to be easy to make that back.
Oh, they're not going to make it back. Yeah. They probably won't even make half of it back.
But they've got to do it. If they want to give themselves a chance at a two-year rebuild, they've got to sell and trade as many of those guys as I mentioned before and sell Pizarro minimum. And ideally, yes, you buy out. I don't even know which one would be the better one to buy out. I would buy out Higuain.
Matuidi.
No.
I would buy out Matuidi.
If you buy out Higuain, it gives you more options of guys to bring in to replace him. Matuidi, you can hide in some ways on the field. If you have Higuain as your number nine,
but I think
you're stuck.
I think Higuain could be good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
Like he could score goals for you, you know? Like, I think Higuain could produce in a productive way. Like,
and he's cheaper to buy out, too, Matuidi. He's cheaper to buy out.
He is, you know? And, you know, you already have the procedure where you paid him illegally but once before, so you know how to hide. No, I'm kidding. They can't do that again. But, I mean, maybe they can trade Matias Pellegrini. Maybe they can find some money there. Who knows, right? Like,
I think they're going to sell Pellegrini, and I think they're going to get some money back for him. Not a lot. They don't have any leverage. But I think they'll get some money back on Pellegrini that they can use towards the next young money signing. But also, like, let's be real here, okay? There's a very clear shift in leadership where David Beckham had a real big influence. He came out and said it. I'm moving to Florida, Miami. I'm going to have my hands on this team more. They went with, you know, Matuidi, Higuain, Shawcross, Gibbs, Neville. Very clearly Beckham's influence, very clearly old guys and friends of Beckham. And so the question is, are they going to, and before that, Paul McDonough, they signed young players and those young players did not work, right? That's what prompted the switch in strategy. So is this ownership group going to recognize that they have to take advantage of the MLS rules as they exist today, and that those rules are forcing you to sign young players in order to really maximize your roster. That has to happen. You know, they need to go get some $200,000 cap hit DPs. They have to do it.
I mean, yeah, they do, but they also, like, more than anything else, they actually need production from their DPs. I think that's becoming more and more kind of calcified for me over the years. If your DPs produce, especially if you spend money on them, you're probably going to be pretty good, you know? And if they don't, things might blow up fantastically. And that's what's happening right now. They've lost six games in a row by a combined score, 13-1. That's like as ugly as it gets. Like, it's, I guess they could concede more goals than 13 in six games, especially when five of those came in one of those games. But I just don't know, man. I think it is a full teardown, and they don't have the resources anymore that are given, the extra resources given to expansion teams in terms of allocation money because of the fines and because they've probably used a lot of it. So this is going to be a project that probably takes a couple of years to get out of. And, you know, I do wonder, it's the same conversation we had about Atlanta. I do wonder if the fact that, hey, it's MLS, you can turn it around, hurts them and prevents them from kind of blowing it up maybe as much as they should.
Sam, if they don't blow it up and they don't take some financial hits to sell guys at a loss and whatever to open that spot for young money players and all that other stuff, it will be early Toronto. It will be Orlando City. It will be Cincinnati. It will be a 5-year just absolute suck for them.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be.
Yeah, it's astonishing. If you're going to be this bad in your first 2 years, you need to be like Minnesota United, right? Where they were bad in year one and year two. They gave up like a million goals in each season, but they didn't bury themselves under terrible contracts. They kept their powder dry. And I completely disagreed with that strategy at the time. I thought it sucked. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was. I still think it was bad for whatever it's worth.
It's really bad.
And they made some pretty terrible signings of their own, but they weren't tied to those guys long term. And so when year three rolled around and when they opened that stadium, they were able to go out and make some splashes that got them where they wanted to be. And that's not what's happening with Miami. I mean, Paul, I was talking about this with somebody the other day. It is amazing how much money these teams are spending to be awful. Awful. Miami, Cincinnati, Toronto, Chicago. Am I missing someone? Like, I feel like those are kind of the big ones, but like, we're talking about four of the highest spending teams in the entire league right there. Atlanta, too. You know, the bottom five in the Eastern Conference, spending a ton of money, and they're all awful. And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's entertaining and it's interesting, but it's also pathetic. Like, it's hard to spend that much money and be that bad, straight up. In MLS, like, it's hard, and they've all managed to do it. Anything else on Miami? You got any other teams?
I was gonna say it's
about?
Hard and it's not, because like you said, man, you miss on your DPs, which is where all that money is focused, and you suck. So I mean, that's it for me, Sam. What about you? What else are you looking at around MLS?
I just want to give some love. I want to hand out some flowers. You know, we do a lot of hating on this show. Sometimes it turns into player haters ball. So I'm going to give some love, man. And I'm going to give some love starting with the Colorado Rapids. They won again on Wednesday night against FC Dallas. They are, I believe, in fourth in the Western Conference. Fourth in the Western Conference with a 7-3-3 record plus 8 goal difference. I think they have the fifth best points per game average in the entire league. Robin Fraser's doing a really nice job. And Porig Smith has done a really nice job. And they made some mistakes, for sure. Anthony Hudson, not the best hire in MLS history, to say the least, as head coach. You know, they talked about the Rapids way and wanting to play attractive, flowing soccer. And it wasn't that at all for a year and a half, 2 years, but now it is. And they're doing it on a budget, and they're doing it in a way that I think is unique. You know, they're starting to get a production from their academy. Sam Vines, who seems to be being sold on to Royal Antwerp here pretty soon. Cole Bassett, another one that they're getting production from. But they're mostly doing this by picking guys off the MLS scrap heap, you know, and trading for them and saying, hey, we have allocation money that maybe we don't need to keep to use to buy down salaries that we're not really spending on. So we're going to go and trade it for younger players who have a good track record in MLS. You see it with Kellen Acosta, Austin Trusty, Lala Sabubakar. Who am I missing? Diego Rubio.
Keegan Rosenberry.
Michael Barrios. You know, all guys that have contributed in pretty positive ways to these teams. And, you know, credit to them. I've ripped the Rapids in print before, and they've done a really nice job turning things around. And I think other teams could learn from their learn from what they've done, because they've leaned into a model, right? And they've sort of found a little bit of a market inefficiency in terms of going out and trading for players within MLS. And it's working, and Robin Fraser's doing a really nice job. So credit to the Colorado Rapids. I wanted to shine some light on
that. Yeah, I would imagine that's a bit data-driven as well. You know, I think
That's their approach.
Fran Taylor is there, who has a data background.
Porg Smith, too. He's never been shy about that.
Yeah, Fran Taylor worked at StatDNA, which, you know, Arsenal bought. Obviously, connection with Arsenal, same owner. But, you know, I've always said, this show has always been an advocate that there is talent in Major League Soccer that is undervalued and underappreciated and is way cheaper than what you can get on the international market, and typically also doesn't cost you an international roster spot, which makes it even more valuable. And I think Colorado is proving that right. I actually want to give a shout out to Montreal, which I think sort of followed that same idea.
Did we? I mean, I ripped them for the Mihaljevic trade, how much they spent on that.
Yeah, I mean, I do still think in some ways they overspent on Georgie, but in the relative plan was that they could get Georgie for cheaper than they could get somebody who did what Georgie did on the international market. And if that's the idea of how you're going to build this roster, it works. He's been productive. You know, they went and traded for guys like Kamal Miller. You know?
Yeah, Mason Toy.
And I also, Wilfried Nancy deserves a real shout out.
Oh, man. Especially with the circumstances.
Yeah.
Right? They're now back in Montreal and they're playing up there. But they were in Florida, living in a hotel, by the way. Right? Toronto and Vancouver. Vancouver's still in Utah. But Toronto and Vancouver, they had different setups. Vancouver, every player has an apartment. Some of them are rooming together. Some of them aren't. Their families are down there, all of that jazz. Toronto, again, similar situation. Guys could be in a hotel. Guys could be offsite. They kind of had options. Montreal primarily was in a hotel. That's a different lifestyle. You know, you're a little more cramped. You're a little more locked in. So really difficult circumstances. And I didn't even mention the fact that he took over really unexpectedly, like right before preseason began. So, yeah, huge credit to him. Maybe, like, I don't know. I mean, like, if they keep going the way they are, coach of the year?
Yeah, I mean, Robin Fraser, too. Both of them in the conversation.
Yeah, I would put Bruce Arena and Brian Schmetzer in that as well.
I've got a real trend this year, Sam, at least privately in our conversations. Volunteering you for road trips. But, you know.
Yeah, you do. This is your favorite thing.
It's my favorite thing to do because I can't do it anymore.
Paul's like, I have kids. Sam, you don't have kids.
Yeah.
You need to go on the road constantly.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I also have a life.
But I pick good cities for you. I'm like, Sam, like right, I'm about to do right now. Sam, you should fly up to Montreal, have some duck confit.
It's super easy to get into Canada right now. It's a great
idea. Fly to Montreal. You're vaccinated. Fly to Montreal, get some duck confit, and sit down with Wilfried Nancy for a little bit. He's a super interesting story.
I mean, all right. I'll go back. I'll revisit the impact story.
Yeah, that's your city, bro.
I mean, it's not, I don't even have to fly. It's not that far from
It was my city my first year covering Orlando City. They played two away games in Montreal. I loved it. I stayed at a hotel right across from this restaurant that had duck confit, which I love, and I ate it for like every meal.
Do you like duck?
I love duck.
You never talk about it.
Anyway.
But no, it's a point well taken about Montreal. I did also want to talk about Vancouver. It's mostly because they're top of mind for me. I just submitted a story on the Whitecaps. I was actually randomly out in Utah, and so I spent a little bit of time with them. Paul, I'm curious what you think of this. I talked to Mark Dos Santos. I talked to Andy Rose. And they're like, yeah, it's been hard, man. It's been hard. Hardest experience of my professional career, which was what Mark Dos Santos told me. And, you know, they're not anyone's definition of a good team. They have 13 points in 14 games. They have one of the worst goal differentials in the league. They can't create at all in possession. I think they only have 8 open play goals this season, which is kind of astounding. They're good on set pieces, though. Got to watch out for them there. But they kind of think they're on the cusp. They're like, yeah, it's been bad, but if we get a number 10, and Dos Santos is like, and we're going to get one. Like, he told me last week that they might have an announcement this week, which doesn't really seem all that likely at this point, but we'll see. They're like, if we get a number 10 and we can just clean a couple things up defensively, like, I think we're going to make a big jump when we get back home. We're going to have that boost as well. I know I'm sort of putting you on the spot here because you probably haven't watched a ton of Whitecaps games, but do you buy into that at all? I mean, their underlying numbers are bad, but they've also dropped 6 points in the last 10 minutes of games this year. So it's not like it's things that they can't necessarily correct. The margin's been pretty fine.
Yeah, no, I don't buy it.
There's, all right, there you go.
There's just been no real indication from them over the last couple years that they're close. You know? I mean, to your point, to be honest, the number of games I've watched Vancouver, I mean, the most memorable game I've watched in the last couple years mm-hmm. involved Vancouver, but like...
Most memorable game of all time in MLS.
Yeah, of all time, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
But I just... No, I mean, like, maybe I'm like a, you know, believe it when I see it kind of guy in general. I don't know. I don't think so. I think I can look at a team and say, hey, I see something happening here. Like, I feel like I was like a believer early on in Minnesota.
If they sign a DP number 10 is like a pretty large change.
Yeah, but also it's like, right? It's like I'm looking at Austin. Like, Austin has 13 points in 13 games versus Vancouver's 13 and 14. I look at Austin, I'm like, if they sign a number 9, I could see them making the playoffs. A productive number 9, right? Like, I believe that there is enough there. I can see how it was built. I can see how it's a missing piece. I don't feel that way about Vancouver. I think they're than one piece away.
I mean, from being a playoff team? I don't know that they are. Anyone can be a playoff team in MLS.
It's MLS, baby. They're all.
I keep saying that. But they have some good pieces, man. I like this Deber Caicedo kid. I think Caio Alexandre, I think that's how you say it in Portuguese, but probably not. I gave it a shot. I think he's got some good stuff with him. Lucas Cavallini, if he gets service, he can put in goals, right? I don't know. Michael Baldissimo, I don't know. Have you seen him? I kind of like him. Homegrown midfielder. Paul's like, Sam, shut up about the Whitecaps. I don't know these people. There's too many teams. We can't keep track of it anymore.
I mean, Sam... If people are still listening to this podcast an hour in, we've done an incredible job, and then you just dropped like 5 minutes of Whitecaps talk on them, and they're all gone now.
Dude, listen, I'm just here to shine some light on the teams that don't get light shined on them, all right?
I just want to say that...
The Caps fans have been through a hard time. They haven't been able to see their team in 2 years, all right? Just trying to give them a little TLC.
If my buddy Dylan Hernandez is listening to this podcast in Tokyo at the Olympics... This is definitely...
I bet he's not.
Definitely getting chalked up high on his list of him texting me, how do you and Sam know so much about these random people in Major League Soccer on these random teams? Sam, this is high on that list.
Because we are damaged individuals.
We really
Thanks for listening to Allocation Disorder. We'll be back next week.